Messages to the Baha'i World, cassette number 4, side 2, continuing now from page 86.
Prayers for Faith in Persia. Call upon all believers to join me in special fervent prayers for divine protection of the vital interests and complete emancipation from shackles of the beloved faith in Baha'u'llah's native land, Shoghi. Cablegram, April 30, 1955. Appointment to International Baha'i Council. Announced to National Assemblies, the number of the members of the International Council has been raised to 9 through appointment of Sylvia Iois Shoghi. Cablegram, May 4, 1955. Implications and requirements. Impelled at this grave hour in the checkered history of the over century-old, world-encompassing, repeatedly persecuted, yet undefeatable faith, to summon the entire body of the valorous upholders of its institutions, who severally and collectively stand pledged to the prosecution of the mightiest crusade launched since its inception, whether residing in homelands or overseas, however repressive the regimes under which they labor, to ponder anew the full implications and essential requirements of their stewardship of the cause of Baha'u'llah, entreat them to refuse to allow any vicissitudes, present or future, to dampen their ardor and enthusiasm, impair their solidarity, weaken their resolution, or deflect them from their high purpose. Unbowed by adversity, disdainful of the clamors, undeterred by the machinations of the inveterate, artful traditional enemies who are alarmed by their own declining fortunes, contrasting with the evidences of the dynamic force, impelling power, rising prestige, indivisible unity, accumulating resources, multiplying institutions, and inextinguishable spirit of God's infant faith. It behooveth them to bend their energies, rise to higher levels of consecration, vigilantly combat all forms of misrepresentations, eradicate suspicions, dispel misgivings, silence criticisms, through still more compelling demonstration of loyalty to their respective governments, win, maintain, and strengthen the confidence of the civil authorities in their integrity and sincerity, reaffirm the universality of the aims and purposes of the faith, proclaim the spiritual character of its fundamental principles, and assert the non-political character of its administrative institutions. Appeal to members of communities untrammeled by the disabilities and shackles imposed on their less privileged brethren, particularly those established in the North American continent, recognized stronghold of the administrative order of the faith, and those residing in the British Commonwealth and Empire, situated in the heart of the east and west of the African continent, scattered throughout the Antipodes and Pacific area, to arise promptly and accelerate the tempo of their activities. Multiply exploits which will more than offset the transient setbacks which a steadily advancing and as yet not fully emancipated faith may suffer. Theirs is the sublime opportunity so to act as to thoroughly dishearten and confound any schemes which envious, fanatical, and embittered adversaries tottering to their fall may devise. Share a message with National Assemblies. Shoghi. Cablegram, May 26, 1955. Archbreaker of Baha'u'llah's Covenant. Announced to National Assemblies that Mujtahideen, the most redoubtable adversary of Abdu'l-Baha, denounced by him as the incarnation of Satan, and who played a prominent part in kindling the hostility of Abdul Hamid and Jamal Pasha, and who was the chief instigator of covenant-breaking an archbreaker of Baha'u'llah's covenant, and who, above 60 years, labored with fiendish ingenuity and guile to undermine its foundations, miserably perished, struck with paralysis affecting his limbs and tongue.
The electrical storm in the background evidently has destroyed the rest of this letter on the tape, read by Walker A. Jensen. I will finish. Dispensation of Providence prolonged the span of his infamous life to 100 years, enabling him to witness the extinction of his cherished hopes, and the disintegration with dramatic rapidity of the infernal crew he increasingly incited and zealously directed, and the triumphant progress and glorious termination of Abdu'l-Bahá's 30-year ministry, as well as evidences of the rise and establishment in all continents of the globe of the administrative order, child of the divinely appointed covenant, and harbinger of the world-encircling order. Shoghi, cablegram, June 3rd, 1955.
Mysterious dispensations of ever-watchful providence, hastening through turmoil and trial, the triumph of his undefeatable faith, dictating at this critical hour the sudden deterioration of the situation confronting the largest community of the Baha'i world, as evidenced by the violent recrudescence of the persecution afflicting intermittently for over a century its members residing in Baha'u'llah's native land. Following the seizure and the destruction of the dome of the community's national administrative headquarters, the occupation of similar institutions in all provinces, the government declaration of the Majlis outlawing the faith, and a virulent press and radio campaign distorting its history, calumniating its founders, misrepresenting its tenets, and obscuring its aims and purposes, a series of atrocities has been perpetrated in rapid succession throughout the length and breadth of the land against members of a sorely tried community. The House of the Bomb, the foremost shrine in Iran, has been twice desecrated and severely damaged. Baha'u'llah's ancestral home at Takur occupied. The house of the Bab's uncle razed to the ground, shops, farms plundered, crops burned, livestock destroyed, bodies disinterred in the cemeteries and mutilated, private houses broken into, damaged and looted, adults execrated and beaten, young women abducted and forced to marry Muslims, children mocked, reviled, beaten and expelled from the schools, boycott by butchers and bakers imposed, 15-year-old girl raped, 11-month-old baby trampled underfoot, and pressure brought to bear upon believers to recant their faith. More recently, a family of 7, the oldest 80, the youngest 19, residing in Hirmazak of the province of Yazd, were set upon by a mob 2,000 strong, accompanied by music of drums and trumpets, which hacked them to pieces with spades and axes. Meanwhile, an official circular has been issued by the Prime Minister, addressed to government departments, ordering the expulsion of all Baha'i employees refusing to recant. This highly distressing situation threatens to worsen during Muharram and Safar. Reacting to these barbarous acts, over 1,000 groups and local assemblies of the Baha'i world appealed telegraphically to the authorities and to all national assemblies, addressed written communications to the Shah, the government, and parliament, pleading for justice and protection. Finding written pleas unanswered, an appeal has been lodged with the United Nations by representatives of the international Baha'i community at Geneva. Copies of the appeal were delivered to representatives of member nations of the Social and Economic Council, the director of the Human Rights Division, and certain specialized agencies of non-governmental organizations with consultative status. Furthermore, President Eisenhower, who, according to the newspapers, first mentioned the persecutions at a press conference in Washington, has been appealed to by the national representatives of the American Baha'i community and all assemblies and groups in the United States to intervene on behalf of their oppressed sister community. Whatever the outcome of the present heart-rending events, one fact emerges clear and indisputable. God's infant faith, provided through the operation of a quarter-century-long process associated with the first epoch of the formative age of the faith, with the machinery of a divinely appointed administrative order, and utilizing in the course of the succeeding epoch through the formulation of a series of national plans culminating in the launching of the World Crusade, the newly born administrative agencies for the systematic propagation of the faith, is now gradually emerging from obscurity in the wake of the ordeal convulsing the overwhelming majority of the followers of the faith. The worldwide reverberations of this nationwide commotion will be hailed by posterity as a mighty blast of God's trumpet, designed to awaken through the instrumentality of its oldest, most redoubtable, most vicious, most fanatical adversaries, countless multitudes, and the chancelleries and chief magistrates of the East and of the West, to the existence and implications of the faith proclaimed by his messenger in this day. This long-desired, ardently hoped-for emergence, itself a long, drawn-out process, is bound to pave the way for the emancipation of this same faith from the fetters of orthodoxy in Islamic countries, as well as the ultimate recognition of the independent character of the revelation of Baha'u'llah in his homeland. Owing to the grievous losses sustained and the necessity to demonstrate worldwide Baha'i solidarity, an Aid the Persecuted Fund has been inaugurated for the purpose of bringing immediate relief to the despoiled and homeless victims, myself contributing the equivalent of $18,000 for this noble purpose. However conscious I am of the manifold demands on the adherents of the faith, I am impelled to invite them to participate through contributions to be transmitted through their respective national assemblies. Moreover, undeterred by the obstacles placed in the path of the crusaders of Baha'u'llah, the historic decision has been arrived at to raise the Mother Temple of Africa in the city of Kampala, situated in its heart and constituting a supreme consolation to the masses of oppressed valiant brethren in the cradle of the faith. Every continent of the globe except Australasia will thereby pride itself on and derive direct spiritual benefits from its own Mashriqal Azkar. Befitting recognition will, moreover, have been accorded the marvelous expansion of the faith and the amazing multiplications of its administrative institutions throughout this continent, a continent fully deserving of a house of worship, complementing the four national Hazaratal Kuts already established, wherein the spirit of an unconquerable faith can dwell, within whose walls the African adherents of the faith of Baha'u'llah can congregate, and from which anthems of praise glorifying the Most Great Name can ascend to the concourse of the Abha Kingdom. Transmit message to hands of the cause and national assemblies. Shogi, Cablegram, August 23, 1955. Hands of Cause, Fifth Appointment. Inform hands and national assemblies that Barka's son, Ali Muhammad, has been appointed to succeed his father, now gathered into the concourse on high in the Abha Kingdom, as trustee of Hukuk and elevated to rank of Hand of the Cause. Shogi, Cablegram, November 15, 1955. So significant a victory. The triumphant termination of the second phase of the decade-long global spiritual crusade on which the followers of the faith of Baha'u'llah have so auspiciously embarked impels me to share with the delegates assembled at the annual Baha'i Convention, convened in all the continents of the globe, the feelings of joy, of pride, and of thankfulness which so significant a victory has evoked in my heart. A remarkable victory. The year that has just ended, a year which posterity cannot fail to regard as one of the most eventful and challenging in the annals of the formative age of the Baha'i dispensation, has been overshadowed in the course of its opening months by a sudden and highly menacing crisis in the fortunes of this faith, a crisis which, though as yet not fully resolved, has already led to a remarkable victory over the combined forces of its traditional adversaries in the land of its birth, who for more than a century have plotted assiduously to disrupt its foundations, tarnish its glory, and extinguish its light. A long abused, downtrodden, sorely tried community, constituting the overwhelming majority of Baha'u'llah's followers, subjected recently to the strain and stress of a violent recrudescence of persecution, which was marked throughout by intense vilification, intimidation, spoliation, expulsion, arson, rape, and murder, has emerged triumphant from yet another grueling experience, a testing period of exceptional severity, its unity unbroken, its confidence reinforced, its prestige considerably enhanced, fame noised abroad to an unprecedented degree, its administrative agencies unshaken, its endowments unimpaired, and the grim, boastful, and reiterated threats of its sworn enemies to outlaw it through formal legislative action, confiscate its property, demolish its edifices, imprison and deport its members, and extirpate it, root and branch, in the native land of its founder, unenforced. Progressive unfoldment of the 10-year crusade. Simultaneous with this marvelous, awe-inspiring interposition of providence at this critical stage in the mysterious evolution and the resistless progress of God's infant faith in the land of its birth, toward the two shining goals of complete emancipation from the shackles of religious orthodoxy and of state recognition, an equally significant development can be noted during the last 12th month in the progressive unfoldment beyond the confines of this storm-tossed land and stretching to the farthest corners of the earth of the 10-year plan, now entering upon the third and what promises to be the most brilliant phase of its execution. This world-encompassing enterprise embarked upon 3 years ago on the occasion of the worldwide celebrations commemorating the centenary of the birth of the mission of the founder of our faith, has in all phases of its operation throughout five continents as well as the islands of the seas gathered swift momentum and is demonstrating in both its territorial and institutional aspects a vitality and has registered successes that have far exceeded the expectations of even the most sanguine among its promoters. The number of localities into which the light of this unconquerable faith, now radiating the splendor of its glory over the face of the planet, has penetrated, has swelled to well nigh 3,700, marking an increase of almost 500 in the course of a single year. The number of sovereign states and chief dependencies included within its pale, which multiplied with such amazing swiftness during the opening year of this world crusade, has now risen to 247 through the arrival of the Knights of Baha'u'llah, Uday Narain Singh, Frank Wiss, and Daniel Haumont in Tibet, in Cocos Island, and Loyalty Islands, respectively, as well as through the opening of Laos and Cambodia, and of the islands of Pemba, Fernanda Po, Trinidad, and Carrisco. Territory is not included in the provisions of the 10-year plan. And as a result of information recently received indicating the presence of a few believers in the Soviet republics of Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, the number of local spiritual assemblies now functioning throughout the length and breadth of the Baha'i world exceeds 900. Every single country listed in the plan within the confines of every continent of the globe, with the exception of those within the Soviet orbit, are now open to the faith. All islands figuring in that plan, over 70 in number, situated in the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Indian Oceans, in the Mediterranean and the North Seas, have likewise been open except Nicobar Islands, Chagos Archipelago, Hainan Island, Sakhalin Island, Spitsbergen and Anticosti Islands. The number of the islands of the globe to which the message of Baha'u'llah has been carried since its inception now totals 98. In the Pacific Ocean alone, the number of open territories is now over 40, while the number of localities where Baha'is reside exceeds 170. The number of languages into which Baha'i literature has been and is being translated has now reached 190, no less than 34 of which are to be regarded as supplementary to those included in the provisions of the plan. Fast awakening continent of Africa. In the continent of Africa and in its neighboring islands, in both the Atlantic and the Indian Oceans, the number of the avowed supporters of the faith has passed the 3,000 mark, over 2,500 of whom belong to the Negro race. The number of territories open to the faith in that fast awakening continent and its neighboring islands has risen to 58, while the number of localities where Baha'is reside is over 400. The number of tribes represented in the Baha'i community is now over 140. The number of local assemblies already established is over 120. And the number of languages into which Baha'i literature has been and is being translated exceeds 50. 43 national Hazaratal Kuts. The number of incorporated assemblies, both local and national, in various continents of the globe has been raised to 168, the latest additions being the Italo-Swiss National Spiritual Assembly and the local spiritual assemblies of Brussels, Tokyo, Liverpool, Hamilton, Winnipeg, Quincy, Basel, Zurich, Geneva, Heidelberg, Buenos Aires, Saigon, Suva, Malacca, and Addis Ababa. The number of national Hazaratal Kuts, precursors of Baha'i national spiritual assemblies, acquired in the capitals and leading cities of North, Central, and South America, the goal countries of Europe, of Africa, Asia, and Australasia, and of the several islands of the globe, has reached 43, involving the expenditure of over $500,000, amply compensating for the seizure and occupation of the National Administrative Headquarters of the Faith and the demolition of its dome by the military authorities in the Persian capital. Temple sites and endowments. Land for 10 temple sites has, moreover, been acquired at a cost of no less than $100,000, while negotiations are well advanced for the acquisition of the one remaining temple site to be purchased in the Swedish capital. No less than 30 of the 51 countries listed in the 10-year plan, national Baha'i endowments estimated as having a value of $100,000 have been acquired, outstanding among them being the Maxwell House, honored by the presence of Abdu'l-Bahá while in Montreal, which has been transferred by hand of the cause Amatul Baha to the Canadian National Spiritual Assembly. Efforts are, moreover, being strenuously exerted for the establishment of similar endowments in the 21 remaining countries. Following the completion and adoption of the design for the first Mashrikal Ashkar in the cradle of the faith, steps have been taken for the preparation of no less than 3 additional designs, one for the temple scheduled to be erected in the heart of the European continent, another for the one to be erected in the near future in the African continent, and the third for the one contemplated for Australasia, paving the way thereby in each of the remaining continents of the globe for the erection of a house to be consecrated to the worship of the one true God and to the glory and honor of his messenger for this day. Development of Baha'i World Center. In the Holy Land, the center and pivot around which the divinely appointed, fast-multiplying institutions of a world encircling, resistlessly marching faith revolve, the double process, so noticeable in recent years, involving a rapid decline in the fortunes of the breakers of Baha'u'llah's covenant and proclaiming the rise of the institutions of its world administrative center in the shadow of his shrine, have been accelerated on the one hand, to the death in miserable circumstances of the treacherous, malignant Majid Din, the last survivor of the principal instigators of the rebellion against the will of the founder of our faith, and on the other, to the laying of the foundation and the erection of some of the pillars of the facade of the northern side of the International Baha'i Archives, the first of the major edifices destined to constitute the seat of the World Baha'i Administrative Center to be established on Mount Carmel. No less than 30 of the 52 pillars, each over 7 meters high, of this imposing and strikingly beautiful edifice have already been raised, whilst half of the 900 tons of stone ordered in Italy for its construction have already been safely delivered at the port of Haifa. A contract, moreover, for over $15,000 has been placed with a tile factory in Utrecht for the manufacture of over 7,000 green tiles designed to cover the 500 square meters of the roof of the building. Coincident with these building operations, an extensive plot adjoining the resting place of the greatest holy leaf has, after protracted and difficult negotiations, been purchased for the sum of $100,000 for the purpose of extending and safeguarding, on the one hand, the area of the International Baha'i Endowments on Mount Carmel, and of providing, on the other, the much-needed space for the extension and completion of the far-flung arc around which the edifices of the World Baha'i Administrative Order are to be built. The recently acquired area surrounding the holiest shrine in the Baha'i world, and its appointed Qibla in the plain of Akka, has been further extended through the purchase from the Development Authority of the State of Israel of a dilapidated house situated south of the mansion and blessed by the presence of Abdu'l-Bahá, and in which he was wont to receive his friends, amongst them the first party of Western Baha'i pilgrims to arrive in the Holy Land after the passing of Baha'u'lláh. To these latest acquisitions must be added the purchase of another plot situated in the neighborhood of the Bab Sepulchre and adjoining the area surrounding the future seat of the World Baha'i Administrative Order, raising thereby the total area of the International Baha'i Endowments in the Holy Land to over 400,000 square meters. Furthermore, the necessary formalities have been completed in connection with the purchase of the site for the future Mashrikul Azkar on Mount Carmel, while the transfer of the title deeds of recently acquired plots to the name of the Israel branches of the United States, the British, the Persian, the Canadian, and Australian Baha'i National Spiritual Assemblies is being expeditiously carried out. Events in the United States. In the United States of America, the home of the champion builders of a fast evolving order, an official invitation was extended to the Baha'i community by the San Francisco Council of Churches to send representatives to attend the service of prayer for peace and divine guidance to the United Nations, an invitation to which the community warmly responded. At this interreligious gathering held in the Cow Palace in San Francisco, the birthplace of the Charter of the United Nations, which united nearly 16,000 people in worship and silent prayers, and at which government leaders, among them the United States Secretary of State, were present, the voice of the Baha'i representative was the first to be raised, reciting a prayer revealed by Baha'u'llah, after whom a prayer was read by each of the representatives of the Christian, the Muslim, the Jewish, the Hindu, and the Buddhist faiths, all of which were similarly invited to participate in that immense and historic gathering. A prayer revealed by Abdu'l-Bahá for America was presented by the elected national representatives of the United States Baha'i community to President Eisenhower, who acknowledged its receipt in warm terms and above his own signature. Other victories and achievements. Nor should mention be omitted in this brief survey of Baha'i victories and achievements in the course of the closing year of the second phase of the 10-year plan, of the establishment of a Baha'i publishing trust in India, of the establishment of over 30 new centers and 15 assemblies in India, Pakistan, and Burma. By the purchase of some of the holy sites blessed by the footsteps of Baha'u'llah in Adrianople, the land of mystery, and the scene of the proclamation of his message. Of the holding of the first Baha'i summer school in Central Africa, in Kibuku, Uganda, attended by about 100 African and white believers, and representatives of no less than 28 Baha'i local assemblies. Of the convocation of the first historic All-France Teaching Conference, the first fruit of the combined labors of the believers of about 30 centers already established throughout the length and breadth of that country. Of the setting apart of a plot to serve as a burial ground for the members of the Baha'i community in Tripoli, Libya, and in the capital of Tanganyika. Of the purchase of land for the establishment of a Baha'i summer school in Iraq. Of the extension to the Baha'i women in Egypt of the right to be elected to the Baha'i National Assembly of Egypt, as well as to participate as delegates in the National Baha'i Convention. Of the purchase in an island near Muara, Sibirdut, and Tawi Islands, of a plot supplementing the Baha'i endowment established in Jakarta, the Indonesian capital. Of the pushing of the northern outpost of the faith in Alaska to Point Barrow beyond the Arctic Circle. Of the initiation of auxiliary plans for the promotion of the faith in the Seychelles Islands and in the Sudan, and of the arrival of a pioneer in Praslin Island, forming a part of the Seychelles group. Appeal to United Nations. Nor can I in this survey allow to pass unnoticed the energetic and commendable efforts exerted by Baha'i communities the world over for the support, protection, and relief of the persecuted members of the Persian Baha'i community, subjected to one of the severest ordeals experienced in recent years by the steadfast followers of the faith in the land of its birth. Following this barbarous recrudescence of religious persecution and the transmission of over 1,000 messages by Baha'i communities, some in writing and others telegraphically, to His Majesty the Shah, the government, the Majlis, and the Senate, and reinforcing the wide publicity given in the world's leading newspapers, and the numerous protests voiced by scholars, statesmen, government envoys, and people of eminence, such as Pandit Nehru, Eleanor Roosevelt, Professor Gilbert Murray, and Professor A. Toynbee, a written communication accompanied by a memorandum listing the atrocities perpetrated throughout the Persian provinces was submitted in Geneva to the Secretary General of the United Nations, who appointed a commission of United Nations officers headed by the High Commissioner for Refugees, instructing its members to contact the Persian Foreign Minister and urge him to obtain from his government in Tehran a formal assurance that the rights of the Baha'i minority in that land would be protected. Copies of this communication addressed to the United Nations were delivered to the representatives of the member nations of the Social and Economic Council, to the director of the Human Rights Division, and to certain specialized agencies of non-governmental organizations with consultative status. Furthermore, the American president was appealed to by the national representatives of the American Baha'i communities, as well as by all local assemblies and groups in the United States. A courteous and reassuring letter was subsequently received by the American Baha'i National Spiritual Assembly from the State Department in Washington, acknowledging the receipt of the appeal, while the director of the Division of Human Rights addressed in his turn a communication to the Secretary of the American National Spiritual Assembly, informing him that summaries of both the letter and petition forwarded to him would be furnished to the Commission of Human Rights and copies sent to the Persian government. Assurance was moreover given that summaries would also be sent to the Subcommission on Prevention of Discrimination and Protection of Minorities. As a further measure to obtain redress, a $40,000 publicity campaign was initiated by the American Baha'i community designed to lend an impetus to the proclamation of the fundamental verities of the faith, the aims and purposes of its followers, and of the disabilities suffered by the overwhelming majority of its adherents in the land of its birth. Enrollment in Virgin Territories. Nor can I refrain from emphasizing in this rapid survey the highly significant fact that in over 60 territories, constituting more than a half of the total number of virgin territories open to the faith since the inauguration of the World Spiritual Crusade, the number of those who have espoused the cause of Baha'u'llah and listed under his banner has surpassed the number originally anticipated and regarded as a minimum for the opening of these territories. That in a considerable proportion of them, the Baha'i membership has far exceeded the number required for the formation of local assemblies. That in Gambia as many as 300, and in the Gilbert and Elise Islands as many as 500, have been and are being enrolled beneath his standard. And that in Uganda alone, which holds the palm of victory, the number of registered believers has exceeded 1,000. Next phase of World Crusade. Such heartwarming, soul-stirring examples of Baha'i initiative and enterprise, such splendid testimonies to Baha'i solidarity, perseverance, courage, fortitude, and self-sacrifice, displayed in rapid succession and over so immense an area of the globe's surface, and in the face of mounting opposition on the part of those who envy the ever-widening glory of the faith, or fear the influence of its all-pervasive power, have shed on the opening chapter of this crusade a luster which the passing of time can never tarnish. The third phase of this momentous enterprise, the opening of which is at this hour being signalized by the emergence of no less than three additional regional Baha'i assemblies in the African continent, must cast on the annals of this prodigious crusade an illumination of such brilliancy as will eclipse the splendor of this luster. The glorious and stupendous work already accomplished, singly and collectively, in the course of three brief years in five continents of the globe, in the islands of the seas, both at home and abroad, in the teaching as well as the administrative spheres of Baha'i activity, must, as the army of Baha'u'llah's crusaders marches forward into new and vaster fields to capture still greater heights, never be jeopardized or allowed to lag or suffer a setback. Prizes so arduously won should not only be jealously preserved, but should be constantly enriched. Far from suffering the long and distinguished record of feats which have been achieved to be tarnished, assiduous efforts must be exerted to ennoble it with every passing day. The newly opened territories of the globe must, under no circumstances, be allowed to relapse into the state of spiritual deprivation from which they have so recently and laboriously been rescued. Nay, the highly edifying evidences proclaiming the expansion and the consolidation of the superb historic work achieved in so many of these territories must be rapidly multiplied. The local assemblies that have been so diligently and patiently established must under no circumstances be allowed to dissolve or their foundations be in any way endangered. The mighty and steady process involving the increase in the number of the avowed supporters of the faith and the multiplication of isolated centers, groups, and local assemblies must, throughout this newly opened phase of the plan, be markedly accelerated. The incorporation of local assemblies must proceed with a rapidity that will throw into shade the progress achieved in this respect during the first two phases of the plan. The remaining unopened territories of the globe outside the Soviet orbit, now confined to no more than four lonely islands, must, with the least possible delay, be won over to the ever-spreading dominion of Baha'u'llah, consummating thereby the most far-reaching and thrilling of all the enterprises launched through the concerted efforts of his valiant followers. The one remaining temple site destined to be bought in the Swedish capital must be speedily acquired. The six remaining Hazaratl coots, some in Latin America, others in the European continent, must likewise be rapidly established. The Baha'i endowments in the country still deprived of the benefits of this divinely appointed institution must be forthwith purchased. The task of completing the translation of Baha'i literature into the languages listed in the provisions of the plan must be carried out with renewed determination and vigor. The Baha'i publishing trusts that are as yet unestablished must be founded at the earliest possible opportunity. The sacred obligation of purchasing the remaining chief historic sites in the birthplace of the faith, and particularly the scenes of the Bab's incarceration and martyrdom, must be discharged as expeditiously as possible. Search now being conducted for the purpose of identifying the resting places of the father of Baha'u'llah, of the mother and the cousin of the Bab, must be pursued with the utmost diligence and circumspection. The construction of the mother temple of Europe, so vital and yet so long overdue, must be speedily commenced, whilst a parallel effort must be exerted in Africa for the erection without delay of a similar institution. Which the phenomenal progress of the faith in that continent has made imperative. The construction of the home for the aged, marking the inauguration of the first of the dependencies of the holiest house of worship in the Baha'i world, must, now that the site in the proximity of the temple has been acquired, be started and expeditiously carried forward. The process of incorporating the newly formed national spiritual assemblies, whether regional or independent, must be initiated soon after their formation, and should be continually stimulated with every increase in the number of these assemblies in all the continents of the globe. Above all, an effort unprecedented in its range and intensity must be exerted for the speedy multiplication of local spiritual assemblies in all the territories where national spiritual assemblies, whether independent or regional, provisional or permanent, are to be established, for the purpose of broadening and strengthening the foundations on which these potent national institutions, the pillars of the future Universal House of Justice, must rest.
This is the end of side one, ending near the bottom of page 100. Please turn the cassette.